This podcast is part of the Big Heads Media Podcast Network. Go to bigheadsmedia.com for more great podcasts.
Welcome to the Bills Breakdown Podcast. I am Nate Schreiber, and as always, with my co-host, Alex Bollinger.
All right, we are here with a bit of a recap from preseason game one last Saturday and a bit of a preview, I guess, of preseason week two, although it doesn't matter all that much. And I think we'll just have a larger discussion about, does the preseason matter at all? Because we had an interesting Twitter exchange today and, you know, I think good time of year for Nate and I to get our opinions out on that.
Yeah, and this is definitely an interesting discussion and conversation to have. Alex and I have very similar opinions on this, and most of it for us at least boils down to the fact that I think it's very difficult. Like, and I haven't seen any data that shows me that playing in the preseason makes you play better week one or throughout the regular season. Like, I haven't seen anything that shows that. If someone shows me data that says there's some sort of an impact, I might change my mind. But to this point, I haven't seen anything, that's why my opinion is what it is.
Yeah. And I could be swayed if the Bills were playing, you know, the Dolphins, the Patriots, the Jets, playing a division game that really has an outcome, or, you know, it has an impact on the outcome of playoff seeding or winning the division, you know, in the regular season. If that was week one, sure, maybe get the starters out there for a series or two. But in the grand scheme of things, if the Bills lose week one to the Rams, does it matter? I argue no, it doesn't. It doesn't change anything we think about this team if they lose to the Rams in week one. Now, if they go and get their doors blown off by 40, then yeah, maybe we'll be a little bit concerned. But I just don't see a scenario where it matters.
Right, and I think a good way to think about this is look at last year. Last year, the Bills laid an egg week one against the Steelers. They had a blocked punt for a touchdown. Couldn't move the ball on offense. Defense played fine. But offense struggled, and they lost week one to the Steelers. Did anyone seriously think, that meant they were going to be bad last year? Like, I'm pretty sure, and we can go back and check the tape, and I'm pretty sure we came on the podcast and said, yeah, it was disappointing, but this is the Buffalo Bills. They're good. They're going to win the division still. Like, it's not a big deal. If that happens this year, if they lose to the Rams, the Super Bowl champs from last year, week one, I'm not going to care.
Yeah, and you can go back and check the tape after they lost to the Jaguars. I know for a fact we said, you know what? That sucked. They lost 9-6 to the Jaguars that ended up winning like three games all year. And we said, you know what? We're probably going to look back at the end of the season and just say, that was a really freaking weird game, and it didn't matter. And at that point, the Bills were struggling to win the division. And we said, you know what? Probably still going to win the division, even after they lost to the Patriots on Monday night. And that's exactly what they did. It's just, you got to keep level-headed about things like that. Like, the preseason, I don't see how playing your quarterback and your skill position guys that aren't rookies, how that helps them at all. Stephon Diggs, Gabe Davis, Josh Allen have played so many snaps together at this point. They don't need live reps against the Broncos' second stringers.
Yeah, it doesn't make a lot of sense. And that's a really good point also about the Broncos. Nathaniel Hackett, the Broncos head coach, very much in the Sean McVay younger coach mindset. And they hate the preseason. They don't care for the preseason at all. They want like scheduled, closed practices with other teams instead of games. The Broncos starters are not going to play on Saturday. And so the Bills will be playing against the backups for the Broncos.
Yeah, I completely agree, Nate. And I'm not saying this is causation, that the Rams didn't play in the preseason, so they won the Super Bowl. I'm saying the Rams winning the Super Bowl without playing their starters at all in the preseason for a single snap with a new quarterback, with receivers he'd never played with before, did it matter on the outcome of the season? No, not one bit.
And that's really what it comes down to, I think. There's nothing there is no data or no anything that shows that playing in the preseason matters. And until that happens, my opinion is going to be the preseason or playing in the preseason is pointless, and you probably shouldn't play at least your skill position players in the preseason.
Yeah, I mean, just look at what happened to the Ravens last year. I mean, they were the unluckiest team with injuries like in the last 20 years in the NFL, but they lost a ton of guys to ACL tears and other like catastrophic injuries from the preseason. It's not worth it. It really, like, maybe there's a negligible effect of, yep, you know what, they got a little bit of chemistry from playing together in a game that doesn't count towards anything. On the other side of that is, what happens if Josh Allen tears an ACL in that preseason game? People are going to lose their fucking minds. And rightfully so.
Yeah, and that is exactly, like, they should lose their minds if Josh Allen gets hurt like that and is out for the season. Like, it's mind-blowing that we, and I know risk is relative, but taking any risks for something that doesn't matter doesn't, like, that doesn't make a lot of sense to me. Like, that, and that's kind of where I think the main argument lies between that and the fact that preseason doesn't affect regular season play is this doesn't matter. It doesn't affect regular season play, but there's an equal chance of getting injured in a preseason game and a regular season game. So you're not reducing your injury risk. So what are you even doing?
Right. And, you know, reps together does matter, I think, but you can get those every day in practice. Yes, it's against your own teammates, but they also do joint practices where it's not on film for everybody to see against other teams once, and they can't hit your quarterback. Like, if we're going to argue that preseason reps are valuable, wouldn't we say the joint practice ones are more valuable? Because if you look at what teams do in the preseason, both on offense and defense, it's so bland, they're trying not to show anything because it's all on tape for everybody to look at. Like, if anything, the joint practices are where those valuable reps are going to come from, if you think they matter, and I'm not even convinced those do.
Yeah, I think, you know, getting reps in practice, yes, matters. Obviously, we're not saying practice doesn't matter, but I don't think it matters a ton how you get the reps or where you get the reps. As long as you get, like, once you get game reps, and real and game reps matter for maybe young guys, but you can't convince me that, I guess, an established player needs a ton of reps in any situation to get ready for the season.
Yeah, and I think the ultimate argument here is any reward that comes from playing a quarterback and skill position guys in the regular or in the preseason is such a small impact compared to, oh shit, we just lost our quarterback for the season because he got hurt in a preseason game. Like, I don't care how small that risk is, it is disproportionately, like, has a much bigger impact than any positive gain you could get from playing.
Right. And that's exactly right. Even if you play in the preseason and said, okay, the Bills might score 5 more points, 7 more points total on the entire season, who cares? Josh Allen gets hurt, they're going to score 100 less points. And like, that's kind of what the argument boils down to.
Yeah. So if you disagree, reach out to us on Twitter at @Bills_breakdown or send us an email, BillsBreakdownPodcast@gmail.com. We'd love to hear a differing opinion and why you think that matters, if that is your position. So, Nate, I think we won't beat a dead horse there. Let's get into, you know, what we saw from the preseason game in week 1, where not really any of the starters played outside of rookies.
Yeah, and I think the rookies, a lot of them, showed us quite a bit. Like, the rookies were overall very impressive.
Yeah, for me, the biggest, you know, shining star was Khalil Shakir. 5 catches for 92 yards. As soon as they drafted him, you know, I don't watch a lot of tape on draft prospects. I'll watch it once they get drafted by the Bills. And that's a guy we immediately said, wow, he's really good. Why was he a fifth round pick? And you know, you see a lot of those subtleties to his game. Like when he ran that seam route against, I think it was cover two, where at full speed, he just casually dips his shoulder underneath the linebacker or the slot corner, dropping into coverage. So they couldn't make contact against him. And it's an immediate win. He's right by the guy, right into the third layer of the defense, wide open up the seam for like a 20-yard gain. It was just a beautiful piece of route running that you wouldn't really notice unless you watch the playback a few times.
Yeah, Khalil Shakir is, I think he's going to be pretty special. I don't necessarily know how much he's going to get in terms of playing time this year. But if he can continue to build off and show that he can do this kind of stuff, then yeah, he's probably going to earn more time as the season goes on. And I think regardless of his NFL career, the talent that he has should not have been a fifth round pick.
100%. And, you know, he's just really good outside of just route running at getting yards after the catch. Like, he's not a huge guy. He's not overly fast. He doesn't test insanely well. He's just a good football player. He fights for extra yards, and it's hard to find like a direct comparison for him. But I'll go back to what I said after they drafted him. Like, I'm not saying he's going to become Antonio Brown, but in a lot of ways, he reminds me of him, and not the off the field ones.
Yeah, I mean, if he can become Antonio Brown on the field, then that's just going to be insane, absolutely insane for what the Bills would have in a couple years. But I mean, we'll see it when we get there. But he was definitely very, very impressive. And I think he was very impressive, maybe the most impressive. I also think Baylen Specter had an absolutely fantastic game. And I watched a good amount of the part of the game Baylen Specter played in, and he was everywhere. And it gave me, not that he's gonna be good in the NFL, but it did give me a little more confidence that he might make the roster, because going into that game, I didn't think he was going to make the roster.
Yeah, I mean, right now he profiles as a strictly special teams guy. And, you know, if he's playing, it's because like three linebackers got hurt in front of him. But that's fine. Like you said, doesn't mean he's ever going to become anything special, but he looked good out there and, you know, really bolstered his case to make the 53-man roster. And, you know, things are getting interesting at, you know, the roster bubble spots there.
All right, it's going to be very, very interesting when they have to do final cutdowns, because I think it's going to be closer than I thought. And that's not just because of Baylen Specter. There are other guys, too, that are making real cases for roster spots that maybe were iffy in the past. I think Christian Benford's one of those guys, and Isaiah Hodgins might be one of those guys. Like, there are multiple guys that we didn't necessarily think would get roster spots that have made some cases.
Yeah, I mean, Christian Benford might be the starting cornerback alongside Dane Jackson in week one, which are words I never thought I would say on this podcast going into preseason week two. He's just been solid all around. Like, he hasn't made mistakes in camp or in that preseason game. We know Dane Jackson, they view as cornerback one right now with Trey White out, and he's earned that. He's been around for a couple of years. He didn't even suit up for that game, so that tells you they think of him as their top cornerback. They're not putting him at risk. Like, they know he's their guy week one. And then Kyrie Lam and Christian Benford are battling out for that other cornerback spot. And it's just interesting. Like, a first round pick compared to a sixth round pick from the same draft are battling for a starting spot. And, you know, that's not something I expected. I expected Kyrie Lam to struggle a little bit at the start. Like, cornerback's a hard position to learn, but no, we saw both good and bad in that game from him. And when you're playing the defending Super Bowl champs in week one, you can't have those bad plays.
And I think, I mean, I really don't think that there's any real chance that Kyrie doesn't start week one. Unless he's been so much worse than Benford, I think it's going to be, Benford is the third guy going into week one, and he There might not, especially if anyone struggles or anyone gets hurt, Benford might step into that spot. I don't think there's a real chance he starts. If he starts, in my opinion, it would be over Dane Jackson, not over Kyrie Lowe.
Okay, that's interesting. You know, we don't have a lot of disagreements on the pod, but I think Dane Jackson's locked to start right now, just from what the Bills showed us.
And I'm not saying that that's wrong. I think it's very difficult in the NFL to draft the guy in the first round and then not start them week one unless they've been bad.
Oh, yeah, I 100% agree there. I think if they view it as a tie between Christian Benford and Kyrie Elam, the tie goes to Elam easily. Spend a first-round pick on him.
Yeah, so that's kind of where I think it'd be difficult for Benford to start week one. That's kind of, I thought Kyrie Elam played pretty well. The thing that I was the happiest with him is how physical he is. He is extremely physical, which means when Tre'Davious White is back, the Bills are going to have two extremely physical corners.
Yeah, that is a part of his game that I really like. And it also is a bit of a drawback at the same time because he gets very handsy and grabby if he gets beat. And that's where you can take some of those pass interference penalties that really hurt. And, you know, illegal contact is supposedly going to be an emphasis for the officials this year too. But we saw how that physicality plays out, you know, when it's used appropriately. Alec Pierce, a second round wide receiver, ran a slant route on him, one-on-one man-to-man coverage. No chance. Elam shut that down right on the first possession of the game. Great play. He also had another one with Ashton Doolin where he stayed right in his hip pocket all the way down the field, and Doolin never had a chance to make a play on the ball. We know why he was a first round pick. So it's just a matter of, can he not kill them with some handsy penalties when he has, you know, probably Allen Robinson lining up across from him. Like if I'm the Rams, I'm putting Robinson right up against him, probably the first play of that game.
Yeah. And that's going to be his drawback. And that's one of Trey White's downsides too, is Trey does take a decent amount of penalties. And every year, every season, there's a couple penalties that Trey White takes. That's just like, what, like, but that's part of the way, that's how he plays. And I think that's going to be the same thing with Kyrie Lowe, is he's physical, and there's going to be illegal contact penalties. There's going to be a pass interference or two. We have to live with that because of the other side of the coin, where they are, Trey White is dominant, and Kyrie Lowe has a potential to be dominant when they, on all the other snaps where they don't take those penalties. And so I do think early in the year we are going to have some lumps with him. There's going to be games where Bills fans get pissed, and that is what it is. He's a rookie, and the way he plays translating to the NFL, where contact, especially on defense, is like the worst thing ever. And this year, like you said, Alex, there's all this emphasis on illegal contact. We're going to have to take some penalties or take some lumps with him with penalties, I think. But long term, I think it's going to be great having those two guys opposite each other.
Yeah, I think so too. And if you look at Trey's rookie year, I think it was in the first month, or maybe it was October of his rookie season, AJ Green, back in, you know, his prime, absolutely roasted him on a double move with no help over the top for like an 80-yard touchdown. And, you know, I think I remember Trey White like in tears after that because he was so upset with himself. And, you know, that was probably when we should have known, you know, we got a great one right there. Like he just has that like elite cornerback mentality. So there's probably going to be plays like that with Kyrie Elam, because when Trey White comes back, they're going to pick on Elam. Why would you ever throw towards Trey White? He's so good in man-to-man coverage, so good in zone, does things he's not supposed to. If he doesn't have a guy running his zone, he's just out there looking to intercept passes. Like it's going to be a tough go of it for Kyrie Elam. And like you said, he's going to take penalties. He's probably going to get beat a few times, especially early in the season, but that's fine because long-term, I really like that cornerback duo.
Yeah, we just have to, as Bills fans, accept that he's going to struggle early in the year. If he doesn't, that's great. But it's very rare that a corner comes into the league and dominates from day one. It doesn't. very rarely happens. And that's, I don't think it's going to happen. But especially when Trey White comes back, because like you said, no one throws at Trey White anymore. So when he does come back, he's going to get a lot of attention over that, over there on the other side.
Yeah. So Nate, anything else you want to touch on with the defensive side of the ball? I don't think, other than, you know, bottom of the roster spots, I think Benford's locked up. Spectre's in the mix for a 53 spot. Otherwise, I think things are pretty clear cut on the defensive side of the ball.
Yeah, the defense is pretty much, and there's a couple of spots, obviously, you said that we have some questions about, but looking at the other side of the ball, I really think that there's some interesting, especially since what, something you brought up earlier when we were talking before the show, about Isaiah Hodgins potentially making the roster over Jake Coomer.
Yeah, and obviously Hodgins had a good game, 9 catches for 77 yards, but I don't have it pulled up right in front of me. I'm pretty sure he played 8 special team snaps, and Kumerow didn't play any. And Kumerow is like their core special teams guy. Like, he plays almost every special team snap. And that tells me that the Bills coaching staff is looking at Hodgins to say, can he play special teams adequately enough that, you know, we can just cut Jake Kumerow? Because Isaiah Hodgins is getting claimed the second the Bills cut him.
Yeah, he would most likely get claimed. I know if you claim someone, you have to keep him on 53, but he would most likely get claimed. This is his third year, but the Bills have kind of raved about him, and he's finally showing what he can do. And he's had a hard time since he got drafted in 2020. So there was no preseason that year. Didn't play a single snap that year because he was on. And then 2021, first preseason game, I don't even know how many snaps, but maybe 10 snaps, got hurt making his first catch, out for the season. He's out for the majority of that season. Maybe came back to the practice squad late in the year. But now he's actually getting to play and showing it. And I think you're right. The special teams thing is where that's how he's going to make the roster. Because if he makes it over Kumerow, Kumerow's a special teams guy. So Hodgins has to be good on special teams.
Right. And like, I don't think there's any debate within the Bills front office or coaching staff or on this podcast that Isaiah Hodgins is with 100% certainty a better offensive player than Jake Kumerow. It's just, how do they value Kumerow's special teams ability compared to, you know, we might have something long term as our wide receiver 4 or 5 with Isaiah Hodgins.
Yeah, well, receivers that are hit as big as he is with the catching ability that he has, they don't usually go unclaimed, because until they show something in the regular season that they're bad, like what he's shown in his ability, he hasn't played the regular season, obviously, but what he's shown, he's a big guy that is really good at finding the football and making plays. And teams covet that kind of stuff. So someone will give him a chance if the Bills cut him.
And I can't imagine the Bills want to keep 7 wide receivers, like to keep him and Kumerow. Like, it just doesn't seem doable, given that, you know, you got to have more depth at other spots. And I think ultimately they end up with 6. Like, they don't save anything by cutting Crowder. He's looked fine when he played, but he was hurt a lot of camp, and Isaiah McKenzie just took the slot job from him, just won it. It's not that Crowder's bad. He just got outplayed, and he, for the most part, wasn't playing.
Yep. And Crowder's good to keep for the money, financial reasons, yes. Also, is an injury, you know, insurance policy. And then there's going to be certain games against certain teams where Crowder might be better for the game plan than Isaiah McKenzie. And that's fine, but it's not going to be all the time. It's going to be a couple times this year.
Yeah. And just thinking, like, Isaiah Hodgins, he's 23. Jake Kumerow's 30. Like, Kumerow's not going to all of a sudden become this great offensive player. You know, he's been a good special teams player his whole career. The Bills love him, but it's like, you have a 23-year-old receiver that I'm sure a team like the Texans or the Atlanta Falcons, who are at the top of the waiver claim order, would love to have if the Bills cut them. Like, Isaiah Hodgins is instantly probably better than, you know, all but one or two wide receivers on the Falcons roster.
Yeah, it's not just the Falcons. I mean, there are plenty of teams that would love to have him. Packers, another team, probably would love to have him. Aaron Rodgers has already been complaining about his receivers in preseason. Like, he's going to go somewhere if he gets cut.
Yeah, so I think one other interesting thing to note was, you know, Devin Singletary didn't suit up at all. We figured that'd probably be the case. He's their quote-unquote RB1. But I think this is going to be a three-headed attack with Zach Moss and James Cook. Zach Moss, you know, his vision's still a little suspect. Even on that long run, he kind of just ran in the back of his own lineman, then looked the other way and was like, oh, wow, there's all this open space. But he looks like much better physically. I think he was still hobbled by that ankle last year.
Yeah, he just looks healthy, which he's probably going to earn a roster spot this year because he does give them something. He's not that he's going to get a ton of snaps. It's going to be Devin Singletary as most likely the bell cow to start, and James Cook. Devin Singletary and Cook are going to get most of the snaps, but Zach Moss on the roster makes a lot of sense.
Yeah, and I think it's a guarantee at this point because he's been running, you know, with the ones, you know, basically every day, not every snap, but he's been mixed in there. So I think the Bills view him as part of their attack is just a guy to spell Singletary between the tackles. And, you know, James Cook's probably going to be more of a guy you're trying to design to get the ball in space. And they had him return kicks. So I think they're looking to, you know, just kind of retire Isaiah McKenzie from the role of returning kicks, considering he's going to be, you know, probably a 70%+ snap player on offense.
Yeah, and then, I mean, Khalil Shakir was returning the punts, too. So, like, they really are trying to get Isaiah McKenzie to not have to do anything but play wide receiver. And, I agree. James Cook is probably not going to get a ton of snaps, if any. I mean, he'll probably get a few where he runs the ball in between the tackles. So, Zach Moss, in that sense, because Singletary can do that, and then Zach Moss, when Singletary needs a break. But, yeah, James Cook is probably not that kind of player, at least this year.
Yeah, and I think those three guys all complement each other's skill sets very well. Singletary is this one cut, going to make you miss inside the space of a phone booth kind of guy. And after he beats that guy, he's not going to be able to run away from the other team. Like, he's just going to create yards for himself a little bit at a time. And, you know, he's a pretty good NFL running back. Not great. Zach Moss is more your just going to run through contact kind of guy. Not great vision, but he's probably going to be the short yardage guy. It's a bit different style from Singletary. Then James Cook is your guy that's going to catch balls out of the backfield, make people miss in open space. Like, that's what he was drafted to do. And I think we got a question on Twitter. Do we really think the Bills are going to keep three running backs? The Bills are going to keep four running backs with Tywan Jones, five if you count Reggie Gilliam, and all five are going to be active on game day.
Yep, and it would, you know, immensely surprise me if Tywan Jones gets cut. Now, would it surprise me if he gets cut at the initial cutdown? No. That's like likely to happen, I think. But then he'll just come back on a 1-year deal. Because they did that last year too. It's probably what's gonna happen.
Yeah. Unless they want to keep seven wide receivers and just have Hodgins and Kumara. Like, that's, I think Tywan Jones would be the guy that would kind of just go away and be cut and not come back. But yeah, I think you're right. They value Tywan Jones too much as a special teams gunner. Like, he's one of the best in the league.
That's the Bills do value special teams, especially at the bottom of the roster. And that it just makes someone else on the team would have to prove they can play that special teams role at the same level before they would get rid of Tywan Jones.
Yeah. So Nate, anything else you want to touch on? I want to touch on the backup QBs quickly, but feel free to jump in if there's anything else you want to talk about offense.
No, we can talk about the quarterbacks. I know, I mean, Barkley did look a little bit better than Keenum in that game against the Colts.
Yeah, I see, you know, some people want to keep Barkley as the backup, get rid of Keenum. I'm not sure what the savings would be if they cut Keenum, but looking at the body of work there, Case Keenum is just a better quarterback than Matt Barkley. Like, one half of a preseason game doesn't change anything for me. did he look good? Absolutely not. Like, he was missing high, paid for it with an interception, and, you know, it didn't look great. But if Josh Allen missed four games, who do you want in there, Matt Barkley or Case Keenum?
I mean, Case Keenum is not close. And Case Keenum also was a fully guaranteed deal after the trade the Bills made for him, plus the sixth-round pick they traded for him, so they're not going to cut him. Like, I don't know who... Whoever suggests the Bills are going to cut Case Keenum is out of their mind, because it's not going to happen.
Yeah, and even if... Well, I mean, the Bills are going to cut Matt Barkley. They're not going to keep three quarterbacks. Like, he's going to come back to Buffalo to be on the practice squad. He loves Buffalo. They love him. Josh Allen loves him. He's still going to be there every day at practice. It's just... He's your third guy. And looking at the body of work, it's not close. It's Case Keenum. He's the number two.
Yeah, I mean, given how pumped Matt Barkley was to come back to Buffalo, he might not even accept if someone claimed him. I don't even know if he'd go. Like, it sounds like he's pretty much knows his role, which is third emergency quarterback, practice squad, help Josh Allen out. And he seems to enjoy that, which is a perfect role for him to have.
Yeah, it's really interesting because a few years ago, we said Matt Barkley is probably one of the best backup quarterbacks in the NFL. Then we had all this influx of really good quarterback talent in the draft over the last few years. And now guys like Tyrod Taylor, who were, you know, we would probably consider a middle of the pack starter 5 years ago. He's just like, you know, a top end backup at best now. Like, it's crazy how much talent's come into the league. So it's not like there's going to be anybody out there coveting Matt Barkley like there would have been a few years ago.
Yeah, quarterback play overall in the league has gotten like significantly better in the last 5 to 7 years. And it will likely continue to get better, at least for the next few years. I don't know how long it will continue for, but Matt Barkley is not what he used to be. His mind might be coveted, but no one's going to give him a 53-man roster spot because he's smart.
Right. And it just like you said, over the last 5 to 7 years, quarterback play has gotten so much better. There was a playoff game. And granted, I think it was due to injuries, but it was like Tom Savage and was it Matt McGloin or was it even like a third stringer for the Raiders, I think, were starting a playoff game 5 or 6 years ago.
I mean, that's not even the worst one. 5 years ago, there was the Brock Osweiler versus Connor Cook game.
Connor Cook, that's the name I was looking for.
That's like the worst. And then the other game that was bad is the Bengals. The Texans. I don't remember what year it was. Started T.J. Yates when he had like one start in his career in the playoffs against Carson Palmer. That was another bad one.
Yeah, it was just like a weird time in NFL history of like turnover of the elite quarterbacks getting old, retiring, and just kind of a not much talent coming in. And now, like, thankfully for all of us, a lot of good quarterbacks in the NFL now. Like, there were probably 6 to 8 guys a few years ago that were difference makers. It's much more than that at this point. Like, it makes football fun when there's way more good quarterbacks. And fortunately, one of the best ones plays for the Buffalo Bills.
Yep. That's 100% true. Yeah, football is way more fun when quarterbacks are good, because who wants to watch an offense that can't do anything? No one does. That's not football is fun when the offense is fun.
Yeah. So Nate, anything else you want to touch on, or shall we come back? I don't know. Like, probably not worth coming back after the second preseason game unless something terrible happens.
Yeah. So we'll kind of cross our fingers, I guess, for no injuries in the preseason game against the Broncos on Saturday, because that, and then final cuts, I think, are Tuesday the 30th of August, so sometime probably right after that or right before that, depending on how we feel, we'll get back.
All right, so that'll bring us to an end of this episode of the Bills Breakdown Podcast. I'm your co-host, Alex Pollinger.
And I am Nate Schreiber.
Subscribe, download, give us a rating and a review wherever you get your podcasts. It helps other people find the show. Follow us on Twitter at @Bills_Breakdown. Send us any questions, comments, feedback to BillsBreakdownPodcast@gmail.com. Thank you for listening.